More Dirt and Sprague.
Do you trust someone who doesn't like a Pop-Tart?
Dirt.
Can I give you a hot take that might make people look at me and call me an idiot? I think Pop-Tarts are disgusting.
Sprague.
I used to raw dog Pop-Tarts religiously.
Dirt and Sprague.
I'm anti-Pop-Tart.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your football Fridays are off to a great start. We're having a ton of fun. Got actual football to watch tomorrow. Very excited about that.
Red 85, fat hot.
If you missed the first hour of the show, I was guilted into watching FCS football last night.
You ended up enjoying it.
I ended up enjoying it. Joke's on me. Patrick,
should we
Harris
all pick an FCS team?
I'm in on the South Dakota School of Miners. They are
now,
mine.
Is that an FCS team, or are they like even lower division?
I believe they are an FCS team.
Okay.
Because they won last night and only won, I believe.
I don't know. I'm asking.
Well, now I got to Google it because I don't know.
Because the Hard Rockers, like, we need some gear.
Yeah, I now want to go buy a South Dakota. Yeah, they are, plays at the NCAA Division II level. That's FCS, right?
No. FCS is what used to be 1AA.
Okay.
Division two is something else. That's a lower division.
That's a lower division than FCS.
Yes.
So they beat somebody last night.
Yes, they
from
played
a lower
up.
Division. They now, played up.
Yeah.
Well, now they're my Division two team. That's,
there you go.
I'm all in on the South Dakota.
Division two is the same as, I believe, Western Oregon.
Got it. Okay. This is all new to me. I'm learning as we go. By the way, a quick shout out to, I think we have high school football games tonight, don't we?
Let me go look.
I know there's some jamborees going on, but I
probably
feel like there's a couple of games going on. Don't they usually do like a week zero where some teams play right away? Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah,
on
but
that.
It's usually the weekend before Labor Day. Labor Day is not on this Monday.
Right, it's next Monday.
It's
so
next
maybe
Monday.
It's a week from this Friday. I wasn't sure if it started tonight or not.
I don't think they're starting quite up this soon.
Okay, maybe I was wrong on that. But
jamborees,
if you were
definitely.
Okay, jamborees going on.
Oh, wait,
on tonight.
No.
Oh,
here we go. Friday, 8:28.
What do we got?
Yeah, Lake Oswego's at Willamette, Lakeridge at North Medford, Thurston at Sheldon. Mountainside's at Tualatin.
We got a few games.
So
then.
We got a few games.
Okay, we got a
we
small slate.
We have some
slate.
Big jamborees. There's a lot of jamboree action. But yeah, it looks like we actually got some stuff going on.
Welcome back to the Smell of the Grass and Friday Night Lights, baby. It's great. We do have a lot to get to in this hour of radio. Let's start, though. Come on in to the cafe. Hello.
All right.
Here's what's
Sprager's
on the menu,
Dave. Gone, so if there's not something out of the sea on the specials...
Oh, you want something seafood related today?
You're not paying attention.
I got to admit to you.
Do you like seafood for breakfast?
I don't dislike seafood for breakfast, but I don't seek out seafood for breakfast, if that makes sense. I feel like in our Cafe de Dirt and Sprague, we have underutilized the deliciousness of the hearty, thick breakfast sandwich.
Oh,
and so
okay.
Today
you're in a grab-and-go mood.
I'm in a grab-and-go mood. We got too much to get to. I can't fart around here. I don't have time to sit. We got topics to get
That's
to, right?
That's true.
I'm going to give you...
so are you English muffin, biscuit, or croissant?
I am a biscuit breakfast sandwich fan.
Okay.
So we're
going to
be on a brisket, or a brisket. Oh, brisket. That sounds fantastic.
You can put brisket
too.
On that sandwich,
you
too.
If you want
put some
to.
Brisket on that biscuit. You know what I'm talking about.
We're going to go fried egg, sharp cheddar cheese, a little avocado slice. I'm not a huge avocado guy, but a little avocado slice.
Don't.
Bacon and sausage.
Oh.
Double your meat.
There you go.
How do you feel?
I usually, if I'm going to do double up the pig, I will usually do...
Yeah, what are you
going to do? I'll usually do bacon and ham together.
Ah, okay, there you go.
There's something about bacon and sausage with the spice combination and traditional breakfast sausage that somehow...
Okay, throws off your equilibrium a little bit.
Yeah, okay. But the bacon and the ham together kind of work more in concert, I find.
I love doubling up the pig.
Order up! Truist Park waiting to explode.
I started here.
I mean, what?
Complete game shutout!
How you feeling over there, Swag?
Can I hit the panic button now? Is it allowed to hit the panic button?
When you've won back-to-back World Series, there is no panic button that exists.
Well,
it doesn't exist.
They're going for history.
It does not
it.
Exist. That is not a thing. There is no panic button. Chris Sale shut out the Dodgers. Was it a five-hit shutout?
I think so.
I think that's what I read, five-hit shutout.
He was dominant.
He was awesome. There was a really cool scene
I'm not watching any baseball, but I saw it on social media
I had the phone going up in the press box.
His kid was in the crowd, and they brought him back out for the ninth inning, and they put the camera on his kid. He's like, he's like freaking out. There's my dad, and they showed him during the postgame interview and all that. The Braves, now, did they hit a leadoff home run in the game?
It was a leadoff home run. Yamamoto was going for the Doyers. That was it.
That was it. That's all we had the entire game.
So he grooved a 94 mile an hour trying to, get into the game, and he just timed it up, and the solo home run, leadoff home run, that was it.
The Dodgers have now fallen all the way to the second-best record in the National League.
Well, they had a little cushion over the Braves before the series started, and then they got swept.
Those measly Dodgers.
Because the top of their lineup can't get it done right now.
They've now flailed their way to an 80-54 record as they struggle into the postseason.
The Dodgers,
26 games above 500.
Yeah, but what are they, a game and a half out of playing in a wild-card series?
God, you're the worst. Go Braves.
Paz has got his hand broken getting hit by a pitch. He's out for a while.
There's
your
baseball.
They got nothing at the back end of the bullpen. They can't get that sorted out.
Shut up!
Battered, and he led him to a national championship anyway.
Sending that special back.
So last night, Niners and Raiders were playing in the preseason.
Yeah, you saw a little bit of Kirkers looking sharp.
Little Kirkers, he's going to be their starting quarterback.
Yes.
We all know that. That's the way it's going to go. Mendoza played. He played a good chunk of snaps. They played all four quarterbacks last night. The Raiders did. They're only going to keep three, I would imagine, on the roster, but I don't know that. Mendoza was 7 of 14 last night, 57 yards in that interception that he threw.
Yeah.
He had a couple of moments where he just got kind of caught as a deer in the headlight in the pocket, too, and took some sacks.
He still got some growing pains. It's still going fast.
It's going to happen. The pick, if you didn't see it, it was kind of a, I don't know if it was an RPO, but it was like a slant over the middle, and he thought he could fit it over the linebacker.
It did hit the receiver's hands, and then it was tipped, so it's not, it
wasn't just somebody.
He was trying to make a play, but it wasn't egregious. Those are the picks that happen in the NFL.
The only question about the Raiders that I'm interested in is just how long until we see him, right? He clearly is going to take some games, and like he's a rookie quarterback. It's going to be a struggle. Not many guys come in and are successful right away.
Do they have the I know there's the VR system. Sometimes we see Orlovsky on NFL Live and he's got the VR thing.
Oh yeah, the virtual reality.
I feel
goggles.
Like Mendoza, that's he just needs to see so many things. Like he could do the virtual reps, see, read, that sort of thing. I mean, the physical stuff is all. I'm not worried about any of that.
He had a couple of nice scrambles. He's kind of a scrappy runner, if that's a good word for it.
He's in that Herbert where he's more. You think he's a big statue back there, but no, the big man can move if he needs to.
And you saw a veteran defensive coordinator last night throw a couple of blitzes at him, and he just had no like
I see him. He needs to be in the virtual reality, and the minute that they're they get the game tape from the previous week, then he can go to work. Especially like the division opponents, they're going to see multiple times, or once we get actual game tape on future opponents. Like, I think that will benefit him. He'll be able to conceptually go from a virtual screen or tape to the field and be more prepared.
Yeah.
Some guys are, like, experienced. You can throw all the tape at them and whatever, and it doesn't sink in until they're out there on the field for some reason.
I'd be curious how long until he takes over. It'll happen at some point, that's for sure. They wrapped up their preseason last night, both the Raiders and the 49ers.
Order up! Play action. A lot of time for Herbert to unload a deep ball down the middle of the field. Wide open. It's a touchdown. Quentin Johnston to the house. McDaniel Magic strikes for the first time at SoFi to the tune of 65 yards.
That was last night. Noah Eagle on the NFL Network calling the Chargers and the Rams. We'll get to a little bit more from that game in a moment.
The
funny part about this is so they didn't play their starters in week one of the preseason, the Chargers.
No.
Week two, they gave him one series.
It was three and out.
Three plays and punt. Then they bring him back out. They fumble the snap right out of the gate.
Yeah, so he takes a little – he's in the shotgun or pistol. He was going to pitch it to Hampton, and it was like there was
butter
grease
on his hand. Yeah, what are we doing here? He had a ball tipped to the line of scrimmage. It just was like, what are we –
and then all of a sudden
– there it is.
There goes Q, complete break coverage broken, and the only question was, is Q going to drop it, which is – what he's been known for.
He's done that a few times in his career. The funny stat about this, so Herbert threw that ball from his own 25-yard line. It was caught on the 15-yard line on the other side of the field.
Yeah,
the ball never left the camera from the angle of the press box. It was in the camera the entire time. It was not a moon ball. That ball traveled 57.6 yards in the air, 57.6, yes, according to next-gen stats. That is longer than any pass ever thrown by a Mike McDaniel-coached offense either in Miami or San Francisco. And somebody had the take of like, man, this guy had two of the fastest wide receivers in the NFL, in Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, and he had a quarterback who could not throw a football 57 air yards. I genuinely don't think Tua is capable of that.
And you have a quarterback that is the modern-day version of what Dan Marino
was
back in the
day. Yes, he's a rocket launcher. And so everybody's looking for one of those of, like, how can we get excited about this? It was a great play design with some motion. Look, it's preseason football, whatever, but it was just a moment of like, there's the optimism and the promise of what this could be.
The defensive end along with his special team stardom. Chargers bring the house. Simpson has to get away. Across his body, end zone. It is caught. Brennan Presley on the run for the touchdown.
Again, Noah Eagle on the call, NFL Network. Yeah, it was the Rams and Chargers. Rams ended up winning the game. That doesn't matter. But what did matter if you're a Rams fan is that your first-round pick played. And again, he played pretty well. He was not great in their second preseason game. Ty Simpson, after lighting the Chiefs on fire with a good stat line in his debut, he looked awesome last night. Like, he was moving around in the pocket. That highlight, if you did not see it and you're just listening to it, he's flushed out of the pocket. He's rolling out to his left. He's throwing back across his body into the back of the end zone. And it was a great pass. It was his only touchdown of the night. And it's the Rams are, man, Stetson Bennett, I didn't really know what to make of him in the NFL, and he got off to a really rough start. Like, he got in some trouble. He was not really engaged. It just didn't seem like this is a bad pick. It's going to age terribly. He's also played really well in the preseason, too. He's been in their system now for 2+ years, and then you got Ty Simpson showing you flashes in the preseason. Like, it's really funny to think about quarterback situations, and I think the Rams, you can make an argument of the best one in the NFL because of the guys that they probably trust behind Matthew Stafford. And, Matthew Stafford's also the MVP of the league. But Ty Simpson, again, if you're a Rams fan, look, you're not going to see him for a while. You probably hope for 2 more years. But he's looked pretty damn good for you so far in the preseason, and that's all you can ask for.
Order up!
But I also think this is set up here for Shador. I mean, if Deshaun, once he fails, Shador's going to jump into this thing, and he's going to be the guy, and this city is going to be behind him.
Yeah. So you think he'll fail?
Yeah, and it's going to happen. I mean, Shador's playing this year. I think all three of these guys, I think Gabriel's going to have a chance to play as well. But, you know, this is such a young roster with a lot of changing parts and a lot of new guys. So they're going to struggle on offense this year.
The funniest part about that clip, so Ryan Fitzpatrick jumped into the booth on Amazon last night, which, like, you're filling time. It's the second half of a preseason
exactly.
game. Like, somebody come talk and help us out here.
Al's not giving me anything.
Dude, Al. But he did have a great joke about Lake Ontario, because I don't know if you saw that, but we changed the name yesterday because, you know, important
did
issues.
Did we actually?
No, we didn't.
They tried to change it at the Kennedy Center. Gone well.
What are we doing here? There was an overhead shot of their stadium, and he was like, I don't know what we're calling that lake anymore, but you know, that was kind of funny. Also, it was Al Michaels and his wife's 60th wedding anniversary yesterday. And a lot of jokes last night were flying around on social media of, like, that's very Al Michaels of him to be calling a Pats-Browns preseason game instead of celebrating his 60th anniversary with his wife. The funniest part about that for me is Kirk Herbstreit in the middle of it going, you think he's going to fail? Yeah, Kirk. It's okay to criticize people. Speaking of which, can I throw a take at you? I'm going to get to another side of this game in a moment.
Okay.
Look, people might get their pitchforks out at me. I don't know how everybody feels about him anymore. Can I come out with the take of I'm tired of Kirk Herbstreit's dog?
Oh,
I'm over it, man. I get it. You have a dog.
Yeah,
we love dogs
around it. I mean, if he's taking his dog everywhere, that's all fine and dandy.
They're showing him on the pregame show. It's all over social media. Look at that. He's got a press pass. He's at college game day. Like I
don't know. Yeah, there's certain things that TV producers get fascinated with.
That's one of them.
I don't think Kirk is pushing that.
I feel like he's pushing it. I feel like he is.
Oh, you think he is?
I think it's a big Herbstreit thing. I don't know what he's. Look, I love my dog. If I had that job, I'd love to take my dog everywhere.
I think there's
TV
producers and other things that, like. See, I see somebody just turning that into a whole thing, and he's like, okay. He's going along with it. He's not. You know, as long as the dog's okay with it.
Hey, maybe you're right on that. Either way, I will just say, like,
I hope Kirk's not.
Let me get this in the microphone. Come on, man. I'm kind of.
That's you Saturday morning when it kicks off from Dublin. What are you talking about?
Let me watch it.
Belichick going three and out in his first series.
Should I put that? That might be my poll question today. Are you tired of Kirk Herbstreit's dog?
I mean, it's hard because it's just
it's shoved down your throat.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous. I mean,
it's a great looking dog. I get it.
Mad at a golden retriever.
They're great. I get it. It's too much.
But yeah, I understand. It's like, okay.
So here was the funny part about last night's game. So you get that moment, Kirk Herbstreit, like, you think Deshaun Watson's going to fail? Yeah, yeah, Kirk, I do. And then
all of a sudden.
Gabriel in his second year in the NFL with the Browns.
Second lead. Here he goes again. On the money. First and goal. From the 7. Gabriel. Caught inside the 5 to the end zone.
Look, the preseason is made for guys like Dylan Gabriel to
Absolutely.
Thrive because you're playing against second, third. I don't know how many starters are playing for New England. I would guess
Who
not
knows?
Very many.
But he has not gotten many reps.
No.
Like joint practices, stuff like that. They're over with the other guys.
Yes.
He came in and ripped it.
Third round pick. They're not even giving him a chance to win the job, even
he
though
came
he
came in and ripped it.
In the first half, he was 12 of 15 for 186 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a 157.9 quarterback rating. And he was pretty honest after the game. He was asked about it, and he was like, yeah, it's been a frustrating training camp, man. Like, I was a third-round pick, and nobody's even really given me a shot here. The funniest possible outcome of this entire thing, we already know Deshaun's starting, which is a just ridiculous mistake for Cleveland to make. Shador is likely next in line, and here is Dylan Gabriel with
a
better
rookie?
Stat line.
They drafted a rookie,
Taylor
right?
Green played last night. Now, he's raw throwing the football, but he had a scramble out of the back of the end zone because I watched a chunk of that game
last
night.
Well, if you listen to the show earlier in the week, what did we establish about one head coach in Atlanta?
Kevin Stefanski. He likes him small.
Yeah. Plus, your offense is already geared to left-handed quarterbacks.
Dylan Gabriel, available. Go pick him up.
When Tua gets knocked out again.
Yeah.
And
he's playing tonight, by the way.
Penix has whatever injury happens. I don't know who their third quarterback is.
I don't either. Oh, Cooper Rush.
Yeah.
They signed Cooper Rush. He's been terrible, too.
You think a seventh-round pick
come on
for
down.
A guy that's your emergency quarterback?
Come on down, third
for
stringer.
For a team that really doesn't want to win because they want to get their next quarterback in the 2027 draft?
If Tua blows again tonight, they might just flat-out cut him, too, because he's been really bad in the preseason for
is
him.
It, how outlandish is it to see Dylan Gabriel starting for the Falcons by the end of the season?
Not that outlandish.
Okay.
It's the NFL. We got the Pastronaut a couple years ago. Nothing surprises me anymore.
I also happened to come to this country in 76 when the Steelers were winning the Super Bowl. So actually, I was originally and still am a big Steelers fan. Also, a little known fact, but I still watch all the Steelers games too.
That was yesterday. I don't know if people are aware of this. You're down here. We have a new official owner. Or Wednesday, sorry.
Yeah.
A new official owner of the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, it was approved unanimously.
Yeah, we got to go through the final steps and hurdles and all
family.
That.
Family.
And this was a moment that a lot of people pointed out of an NFL. If you haven't seen the video.
This is poor work. This is poor work by the PR staff.
Horrible. His kid is standing behind him. And the second he launches into that, that is the new owner of the Seattle Seahawks acknowledging.
Node Khosla.
He is a lifelong Steeler fan and still watches all of the Steeler games.
What is he, 77 years old or
I
something?
I get it. He's not even the primary. Isn't his wife
no.
the point person?
Well, his wife is the primary. The person that's going to be in there. Like, I think day-to-day is his son.
Okay, who's going to run the day-to-day in and out. Okay.
He's, what's his name, Vinod?
Yeah, I think so, Vinod, yeah.
He's the money behind the thing.
It was really funny to, like, imagine, we freaked out about everything Tom Dundon did. Imagine Tom Dundon at his opening press conference. Now, it's not quite equivalent because the Seahawks the Steelers beat him at a Super Bowl,
now,
man.
If he came in and said he's a lifelong Sixers fan.
Yes, or a Laker fan. I've rooted for the Lakers. I watch
or no,
every
Pistons
Laker game.
Pistons fan.
Yes, anything
if
like that.
If he said he's a Pistons fan.
He would lose our ass here if he said that. I don't care what your fandom is.
It could have been a random team and that would have been fine.
They beat you in the Super Bowl.
That was a very controversial victory.
Did you know that Jerome Bettis is from Detroit?
I was aware of that.
Are you aware of that?
Yeah,
I didn't know
pass
he was from
interference.
What?
Where's the flag?
Still got time. Throw it. It's only 22 years late. That one just made me chuckle. He's got a lot of money. I'm sure he'll be fine. He was asked about the stadium and all that different stuff. But that one, the reaction of his kid's face the second he starts saying that is like, no, Dad, no. Please.
That is poor PR work
please, Dad, don't
by
do
the
that.
Staff.
You own the Seahawks now, man.
You
we
got
can't
it. That you got to vet out ahead of time and say, listen, we understand. That'll be for later on down the road when they say, when did your interest start coming? And I said, well, we grew up. We came to the country. Tell about the story.
Yeah.
Up from your bootstraps and whatever.
I fell into the NFL by watching the Steelers. That's okay
we moved
to say.
To the Pennsylvania area and fell in love with the steel curtain. That was 50 years ago.
Come on,
fine.
Man. Come on, man. There you go. There is your cafe. We have one one more in there we didn't get to. It's a non-sports one. We could get that, save that a little bit later on the show. I do have some more audio on the other side of the college football world, and we'll get to that later on in the show as well. A little college football audio smorgasbord, if you will, including the return of the greatest ad campaign ever made in the history of television. So we will get to that coming up later on in the show. Let's get to Ryan Abraham, though. He's our good buddy, USCFootball.com. They open their season right here on The Fan tomorrow against San Jose State. Five true freshmen on the depth chart, and Ryan Abraham, friend of the program, will hop on, and we'll talk to him some USC football next on The Fan. All righty, welcome back in. 727. A lot of Pat McAfee jokes coming in. So I'll take Pat Kirk Herbstreit's dog over Pat McAfee. they all return next week. You get the dog, you get McAfee, you get what did Shane Gillis call Nick Saban? Indiana Jones or not India, okay, Alabama Jones, I think it was on game day a couple years ago. They're all gonna be back next week. We get the start of the college football season officially tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. over in Dublin, and we're going to go through a bit of a primer coming up here at the top of the hour, what you need to know, things to watch for the week zero slate that is right around the corner and beginning tomorrow. I can't wait to wake up and turn the TV on and have some football on my TV all day. Some of the games are better than others. Some of them kind of matter. Some of them don't. But either way, it's football, and it's real, and it's here, and it all begins tomorrow. And one of the teams playing tomorrow, starting their season on week zero, and I figured let's get a little preview of them. They are not in the dirty poll. This is not a dirty poll stop, just a general preview stop because Oregon's going to be there in about a month. And USC, big expectations for year five under Lincoln Riley. And joining us now is our good friend, Ryan Abraham, at Inside Troy on Twitter. You can go give him a follow. USCFootball.com. They open right here on The Fan tomorrow against San Jose State. Massive favorites. And let's talk some USC football. But Ryan, good morning to you, man. Thanks for the time this morning. We always love having you on. Just the general vibes going into year five for Lincoln Riley. Seems like big expectations yet again. What's the feeling down there in L.A. as the season kicks off tomorrow?
Yeah, it's hard to believe it's kicking off tomorrow. When I hear your voice, I know, okay, we're here at college football again. We're going to talk some USC.
It's time, baby.
yeah, the expectations, I think, are as high as we've seen them since Lincoln Riley got here. I mean, he outperformed in his first year, won 11 games and the Heisman and all that. But, you know, since then, it's been rather disappointing. USC hasn't made the college football playoff. And I think what they were able to put together in the offseason, I think if Lincoln Riley was a chef, he asked for every ingredient under the sun. He's been given pretty much everything. Now it's up to him to come up with some amazing meal. It starts off, I don't know, a little appetizer, I guess, with San Jose State. But I feel like it's one of those situations that he's embraced it, too. He's like, hey, we have everything we need to win here. So I know some of the fans are a little tired of, you know, what he's been saying. But I don't feel like this is an excuses type of season. I think, you know, they have a tough schedule, really, you know, some tough road games and, you know, three of the top six teams in the country they have to play. But I feel like he's said, hey, we have everything we need, and they feel pretty confident they can go out there and win games. So it'll be interesting to see what they look like on Saturday. But yeah, that's the confidence from the staff, what we've heard all offseason, has been really high.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because we work with a USC guy. He's at the show after us, big Trojan fan. And there's times when I feel like he's not critical enough, and I've always been curious of what the blend is down there of people who understand and appreciate what Riley's done in his career and how good of an offensive mind he is, while also seemingly kind of having the same losses every year, like special teams or line of scrimmage play or dropping a road game. You know, a couple years ago it's Maryland, last year it's Illinois, and it's like, how do you lose that game? And so where do you think the fan base is on him? Are they half in, half out? What's the split of people who are still fully riding with Lincoln Riley, and how many of them do you think are maybe doubters, if you will, going into this season?
I think when he was first hired, it was even split, but there was a lot of excitement because USC hadn't gone out and hired a proven head coach in 100 years. It was like Howard Jones in the 30s. Right. Like, that's the last time they did that. So in this situation, it was like, okay, we got somebody with a resume. He's gone to the playoffs. He's won Heisman's. And I think there's people that are still hanging on to that, but there's others who are like, yeah, that's not the style of we want to play at USC. And, you know, I think it's shifted some. There's definitely some still diehards, but there's a lot of people that are skeptical, but I think they've picked up some optimism this offseason. You know, Gary Patterson, weren't sure, you know, him being hired as a DC, it seemed to be working pretty well. The new Bloom Center open, there's, mm-hmm. you know, they got the number one recruiting class. So right. I feel like there's some optimism now, but it's still split. And I think it's probably more on the Riley outside. I mean, every question I get is, hey, if they do this, will he be fired? So when you're talking a lot of that,
right?
There's not like people all in on him, you know?
Yeah, I totally get that. It's a big prove it year in that regard, and they could come out of nowhere and make the playoff. You mentioned the schedule. We're talking with Ryan Abraham. I do want to get to the depth chart because I thought that was interesting, some notes on that number one recruiting class that you just mentioned. You talked about they play Oregon at home at the end of September. They're number two in the preseason AP poll. They get Ohio State at home on Halloween night. That's a great game on Halloween night. And then not the very next week because you got to bye, but the next game, they go on the road to Indiana. And I guess my thought would be, can USC have a successful season this year if they lose all three of those games?
I think it would be tough just because of the way they have talked about it. And I mean, it could be a situation where USC is significantly better. But all of those teams you mentioned, I mean, Oregon might have the best roster in the country. Ohio State might have the best roster in the country. Indiana, Kirk Cignetti is like a serial killer. Like, you know, who knows what he's going to do? Like, so, I mean, I think you could be like, they could have taken some big steps forward and go 9-3 losing those games and still feel like, okay, well, it wasn't enough. But it might, if it's that's the situation, and I think all three of those teams end up being elite, I think you could kind of excuse that. But if it's like a blowout loss to Oregon end of September, or just like not being competitive in the Indiana game, and you know, and they still have to win at Penn State, win at Wisconsin, you know, UCLA is going to be better. So I think 9-3 is probably where I would settle, but I don't, if you can't beat one of those teams, I think it might, you know, it's going to be disappointing. They felt like they've made enough strides this offseason that they should be able to compete. You got three shots at elite teams. Right. Try to win one of them, you know.
Well, and a follow-up to that would be, what is the best win of his tenure at USC? Because I was thinking about that. I knew we were going to talk about USC today. And, like, the Oregon State game from year one came to mind. That was a really good Oregon State team up in Corvallis. There's obviously, you know, the way they dominated Michigan, the Iowa game last year. What's the best win for him in the first 4 years?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think that Michigan game, just because it is a logo, you know, that you're talking about one of the elite programs, and the fact that you have your running backs out and King Miller comes in, this walk-on, and it's putting spin moves on dudes, you know, and just like, whoa, what's going on here? And, you know, I think that just beating Iowa last year, they had a road win at Nebraska. But, yeah, you're looking for that kind of signature one. You know, they had 11 wins that first year, but I don't know. Like, I feel like he's one of those late season where it matters. Are you able to come, if they could have beat Utah one of those times, I think it could have been, but probably the Michigan game, I think from last year, and they're, you know, they've been pretty good at home under Riley. They just got to try to build on that.
Yeah. Came close to knocking out Penn State a couple of years ago too. And that, I think that game went to overtime. They've been close and had some chances at it. Now you mentioned, we're talking about Ryan Abraham, USCfootball.com at Inside Troy on Twitter. If you're looking for the positive outlook of USC football, it is the number one recruiting class. And like, hey, we finally got our ducks in a row. And I know we've talked to you a lot about that over the years of like, maybe not everything was aligned the way it needed to be behind the scenes. And now, to your point on Riley, he's echoing that sentiment of maybe everything is aligned now. I believe I read that five true freshmen showed up at the top of the depth chart at their respective positions. Is that true? And how many of those guys, it was a massive class that they brought in. How many do we expect outside of those five, I guess, to be impact guys right away?
Yeah, they had like five, and a couple of them were in the situations. And then, but you know, on the two deep, there was several more. Now there's a couple of guys that, you know, we thought would be on the depth chart, like a Terrell Anderson, who's the transfer from North Carolina State at wide receiver, thought he would be one of the starters, and he, no mention of an injury, but he wasn't listed on the depth chart. So you have two like freshman wide receivers listed in there. Caden Dixon Wyatt, who was a former Ohio State commit that switched late. And Booby Feaster looks, he looks like he can be special. And Trent Mosley is another one too. And they have Mark Bowman, the top tight end in the country. He's going to be their number one guy. So he's probably of all the freshmen, he's basically just your starter. Like that's, he's their best tight end. So you're going to use him. And they, Luke Wayfull, who's, you know, the top defensive end, you know, edge rusher in the country. He's listed as a starter as well. I thought he'd get a lot of playing time and not end up starting. But yeah, I think all those guys have the opportunity to come in and contribute, especially on the as far as the receivers, the pass catchers go, they lost a lot from last year. So there's some veterans mixed in, but I think the freshmen will have a real opportunity to come in and make some kind of impact.
You mentioned that defensive end, the pictures of him in training camp. I see these guys sometimes and I'm just, how are they 18? I just don't understand how it's possible to be that big, that young, man. It is absolutely insane. When you look at the depth on the offensive line, I know they got an injury a couple of weeks ago. Their starting center, or the guy who was projecting to be the starting center, went down in kind of a freak non-contact injury. It led to a funny back and forth between national, like I saw Tom Fornelli, a national voice, saying this is a devastating blow, and USC fans arguing, no, it's not. And where does Ryan Abraham fall on that? Because I know that's been at times an issue for them, right? Line of scrimmage play and the depth that's required to survive the length of the season. Deal or no deal, the center going down a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that they have five guys that were starters last year, but none of them had a guaranteed spot, including Kelly O'Connor, who ended up getting injured. He's not, you know, the biggest guy in the world, but he was steady at the center spot. Actually, a lot of the fans were clamoring for switching one of the bigger bodies, and that's what they end up doing. Tobias Raymond, he was like a 6'6 guy, you know, big dude playing center, arguing like, wait, when you're playing a defensive front like the Ducks have, you need that, you know, that four-star guy, not the former walk-on who's steady. You need somebody that's going to be able to handle some really big tackles in the middle of that line. So I think this was something that could have happened anyway without the injury, but he's been a great leader. He's, you know, he's played really solid. And I think just that exchange, you knew what was working with him and Jin Maiava. So you're going to try something new. You know, snaps can go wrong.
Right.
I think it's a blow, but he's still going to be around. He's still going to be helping out on the coaching side. But I do think it's a blow to the line. Anytime you lose depth and experience like that, it's not going to help you.
I remember a couple of years ago, obviously this new Big Ten venture, and some of the games I just kind of roll my eyes at, like playing Rutgers or, you know, Maryland or some, you know, Northwestern. Some of them just don't mean much to me. But then you get an Ohio State that comes to town, and you're like, all right, this is the big leagues. This feels like a big deal. You guys got Ohio State coming to town for Halloween night. Where is the concern? Because I remember we dealt with this in Eugene, of like, how many Buckeye fans are buying season tickets to the games and then selling all the other ones just so that they can come to that one game? How much red is going to be in the stadium? Now, at least their color scheme might blend in a little bit with you guys, so maybe you won't be able to tell it as much, but where's the fear of like a Buckeye takeover on Halloween night?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much an LA thing. We see that with all the teams here, even when they're good. But I don't think there's too much concern, but there's certainly going to be a big presence there. And there's, you know, some decent history between USC and Ohio State, and you know, in either Rose Bowls, or they played the Cotton Bowl a few years ago. That didn't go very well for Clay Helton. That was Urban Meyer putting a whooping on them. But I think, you know, the end of the Pete Carroll era, and like, you having those games scheduled, even like, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, I mean, there's been some good, you know, battles there. So I think there's some respect there, but man, Ohio State looks like a juggernaut again. So it's certainly going to be tough. But yeah, I think there's some concern, but the good thing is you got a lot of tough ones with Oregon coming in,
right,
and Ohio State. Like, that's a pretty good home slate they have there.
Well, it also helps with the takeover too when your stadium's about three times the size of Autzen, because when there's only limited seats, it's, you know, you got to run out of space pretty quickly. Not quite the case at the Coliseum. I'll let you go on this one, Ryan. Man, season starts tomorrow. I'm with you. It's crazy that it's already here, and it's one of the games I'm excited just to see kind of what USC looks like and check out a lot of those true freshmen and see the Gary Patterson defense for the first time and all that. What is the win-loss record this year, you think, for USC? And then do they pull off one of the three upsets, Oregon at home, Ohio State at home, or Indiana on the road? And if they do, which one do you think they get?
Yeah, I think the over-under, Vegas has an 8.5. I'm leaning towards like 9-3. I mean, they could, you know, take care of all the games that they should and then, you know, beat one of those big three and end up 10-2 and go in the playoffs. But I think, like, if they, you know, maybe they get Oregon out of the gate when they come in, and but you lose on the road to Penn State. I think there's just a lot of scenarios where they could end up 9-3. I think worse than that, it's probably going to be, hey, this isn't really, if they're like 8-4, if, you know, 7-5, something like that. I just don't see Lincoln Riley being the head coach anymore. They have to figure something out with that big buyout. But I'm settling in on kind of like a 9-3 with a decent shot at getting one of those wins. But I think if they do, you might lose on, you know, to Washington or Penn State or something like that afterwards.
Yeah, it's a great point too. You just kind of forget after the Oregon game, Washington at home, who's not going to be a you know, cruise control game. I believe, did they announce the USC Penn State game as the whiteout? Did I read that correctly?
It is.
So you got the whiteout game at Penn State, and then you go on the road to Wisconsin, where who knows what the hell the weather's going to look like at the end of October. Washington learned that the hard way last year. And then Ohio State and Indiana. I mean, that's just a brutal gauntlet in the middle of the season. It all begins tomorrow. Ryan Abraham at Inside Troy on Twitter. Go give him a follow, USCFootball.com. We always appreciate the time, man. Have fun being back at the Coliseum tomorrow. I'm sure we'll talk in about a month when Oregon-USC is on the horizon. We always appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
There you go. Ryan Abraham, USCFootball.com. Longtime friend of the program, and it is – talk about big expectations this year, man. Lincoln Riley has delivered a message all offseason of we're there. We're here. Everything's aligned. We got what we need. The money's there. The recruiting's there. The staff's there. The facilities are there. So are the wins going to follow? Let's talk a little bit about USC coming up next, because they open their season right here on the Fan tomorrow against San Jose State. What are the expectations? And then can they avoid that trap game that's plagued them the last couple of years? We'll dive into the USC football preview a little bit coming up next. Get to some other odds and ends in college football at the top of the hour. Back after this. 105.1 FM, the Fan. All righty. Welcome back in. 747. Happy Football Friday, everybody. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say today's show is 98% football.
180! 182! 182!
Begins tomorrow. It actually began last night. South Dakota School of the Mines, head on a swivel. When the miners come to town, head on a swivel. You're going to get upset.
We got to figure out how to get gear.
Somebody texted in. Where did this go?
I might have to call an SID or something.
Get them on the phone. Come on. Where did this go? Let me scroll back. I played against the South Dakota School of Mines. They are awesome and always beat the hell out of us. Good choice. That's right. The Miners. The Fighting Mines coming to town. We'll get to a week zero primer at the top of the hour. What do you need to know? What's going on tomorrow? I do have a little bit more college football later on in the show in terms of some audio we'll get to, including the return of an ad campaign. And Oregon has done something it's never done in the history of its program. And will this stat matter 5 years from now? We'll explain, and we'll get to that coming up in the next hour of the radio program. Our thanks again to Ryan Abraham for coming on USCFootball.com. He's great. There's a balance of part of me enjoys interviewing the full-on honks that get everybody riled up and act like their team's the best thing ever. Was it A&M that we had on years ago, and their guy for the dirty poll was basically like A&M's God's gift to football?
Something like that.
And everybody hated him, and they ended up falling on their face. I think it was right when they fired Jimbo Fisher. And so it leads to like, ha-ha, we can point and laugh at them, right? There's also it's nice to get previews from just balanced people and saying like, yeah, man, I could see 9-3. I could see 7-5. If Lincoln Riley goes 7-5 this year, we're going to have some really uncomfortable conversations. You're in year five at USC. Year five at USC. I just love to play out the idea of, like, hell, I would even, if you're a Washington fan and Jed Fish goes 7-5 this year, you're pissed. And that's only in year three. And you lost everybody 2 years ago, and you've been trying to slowly build back up. If Dan Lanning goes 8-4 this year, do you understand the collective freakout that will take place in the sport? But if Lincoln Riley goes 8-4, it's, you know, they're built number one recruiting class in the country. He's in his fifth year. So I was thinking about this, and Ryan brought it up, and I was curious what his answer was going to be. The idea of what their best win is, and I think you can make a really strong argument that in the 4 years that Lincoln Riley has been at USC, their best win is in Corvallis the first year he was there, in front of a half-full stadium, and the second-to-last year it would have been, I believe, of the Pac-12, and they had Caleb Williams, and the Beavers should have won the game. They had them on the ropes. They said it was one of the loudest places they'd ever heard, even though it was half the stadium because it was in the middle
of
the renovation.
Wait, construction had an echo factor.
Right, an echo factor.
It was all weird.
But they had them on the ropes. They had a chance to win that game. I know that's one that probably still keeps OSU fan up at night. And it's just funny to think, man, like 4 years in, I don't mean this disrespectful to that Oregon State team. That Oregon State team was great. They beat Oregon that year. They came back from down 17. That was a good program. Of just saying that when Lincoln Riley was hired, his best win in 4 years would be a win on the road against Oregon State in front of a half-full stadium. I don't think that's what USC fan would be signing up for, right?
No.
And this is where, like, putting the joking aside, and I love giving Danny crap about him and bringing up how long it's been since USC's beaten Oregon, because it's been a long time. And I think Oregon's going to win the game again this year. If I were a USC fan, 9-3 would be the bare minimum. You cannot lose games that you should not lose. They've done that seemingly every year that he's been there.
Yes.
Dropped a game where you're just, huh? You lost to Maryland? Maryland?
Exactly.
Huh? Illinois sucked last year. And they put up like 700 yards offense, and you couldn't stop a nosebleed. and it was like a 45, whatever the final was. You cannot lose a game like that. And then also on the reverse of that, it would be a mandate of you have to win one of those three big games. You have to show in the fifth year as a head coach. Like, if we're going to turn around and give coaches crap for not winning national championships this year, my guy's on that list. Steve Sarkisian's on that list.
Mario.
If Notre Dame doesn't get it done, what will we say about Marcus Freeman? Oh, can he? Like, if those guys are going to live in a world where it's national championship or bust and you're in year five.
Lane Kiffin's in that world now, too.
Lane Kiffin's in that world at LSU. Like, you're just, if you lose to Oregon, Indiana, and Ohio State again this year, you're just turning into James Franklin in year five, where you're winning the games you're supposed to win and you cannot win the games in which you're an underdog. Because I'd imagine on their schedule, I don't know this to be certain, but I'd be willing to guess Oregon, Ohio State, and Indiana are probably, they might be a Penn State game will be unique because it's a wideout. But in terms of an underdog going in, those are the three that I'm concrete on. If you're still in year five and you can't show that you can knock off one of the, whether it's my team, whether it's Ohio State, who you get at home on Halloween night, or whether it's Indiana in the back end of the year, I got a lot of hard questions, man. And I know that the one side of the coin will argue, well, it's number one recruiting class and they're building for the future and they got all these young guys that are playing. That's fine. Young guys also come with warts, man. They don't have a lot of experience and they're going to be going through stuff that they've never gone through at that level before. And so, talk about big expectations.
They're going to ease into it. Now, I don't know what
they will be 4-0 going into the Oregon.
They should be.
If they're not 4-0, fire Lincoln Riley now.
I don't know if Fresno State's.
It doesn't matter. It does. You're
no,
USC.
I understand that.
They might be a thorn. They might be feisty. You ain't losing that game at home to Fresno State.
But you got San Jose State. You got Louisiana. All three at the Coliseum. Then you go to Rutgers.
You can't. That's the game. You cannot lose that game.
12:30 Saturday conference opener.
I don't care about
the
travel.
Road.
It's Rutgers. You cannot lose that game.
No, I know.
There's no excuse for it. And so you go 4-0 into the Oregon game, and this is where it gets tricky. Is because I mentioned they get Oregon at home, Ohio State at home, and then they go on the road to Indiana late in the season.
Yeah, there's a stretch there. So Oregon, Washington, Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Indiana. So the worst team they will face over
probably
7 weeks is Wisconsin.
Yes, and
that's a road game.
It's a road game at the end of October. So that's the part of the schedule that I don't think anybody's paying attention to is the home game against Washington the week after the Oregon game. So let's say you're in a tight game. They're competitive against Oregon. Either win or lose that game, right? You got to turn around immediately. I'd have to go look and see who the Huskies have that the week before that game, because I think Washington started their schedule is relatively easy. And they could come in with an explosive offense and they catch a nap. And like that's the game that Lincoln Riley loses in his history, just not traditionally at home. Then you go on the road the next week for a whiteout game, and then you get a bye before going on the road to Wisconsin. So 1 week you're in Penn State.
The Huskies get Minnesota at home the week before that game.
Right. Washington should be undefeated at that point, if I'm not wrong. Like the start of their schedule is pretty manageable. They'd be pretty pissed if they're not undefeated. Their back half gets a little bit tougher. Yeah. So you could have an undefeated top 15 ranked Washington coming into town, and you just either got off of a tough fought loss to Oregon or you pulled off a massive upset and you got to turn around and do it again the next week. It's not easy to do. That Penn State game's a wideout. So the schedule is challenging. I will acknowledge that. I also feel like when you're USC, you don't get that argument.
No, you don't get the benefit of the doubt.
You're not Minnesota.
You're not.
You're
not even
Purdue.
Washington in that regard.
Like, oh, we got a tough schedule this year. Okay, if you're an underdog that has not the number one recruiting class in the country, but yeah, you can complain about your hard schedule.
Like, the Huskies have it set up, actually.
They have a great chance this year.
They got a chance to, you know, assuming they handle the Cougs there in the opener, there's nothing goofy there. You get Utah State and Eastern Washington, Minnesota all at home.
They should be 4-0 going on the road.
Is the Wazoo game at Lumen Field?
It's at Husky Stadium.
Oh, okay. So their first four are at home.
Yeah. You're 4-0 going on the road to USC.
So if you get everything tuned up, rolling.
Mm-hmm. Then they got to play Iowa on a short week after USC, so that's a tough one.
So the biggest challenge in the Iowa game will be is if they actually beat USC. If they lose, they'll come home. Everybody will be okay. We had a little false sense of ourselves there after three home or four home games. Let's buckle down. Look out, Iowa.
Right.
But if they beat USC, then that Iowa-Washington game gets a lot more interesting. Because I don't know who's Iowa playing.
Iowa always plays Iowa State early in the season. I know that. Outside of that, I don't believe Iowa has much. They Northern Illinois.
No, they go
to Michigan.
They go to Michigan, and then they get Ohio State. So they might be beat up.
They could be 3-2 or even 2-3 at that point, depending on the quarterback play. Because the Iowa
physically, they might be beat up.
They very well could be, yeah. So that might be a benefit for Washington, especially on a short week, and they got to come out to Seattle. That's a bit of a long trip.
The Iowa game is actually closer if the Huskies are 5-0.
Washington is a team that just has to put themselves in a position to not need a win in the last 2 weeks of the season to have a good year. Like, if you go in as a one-loss team to the I don't think you're beating Indiana. I don't think you're beating Oregon on the road. But if you're
cruising, you have confidence, you figured out what you do well.
You could be 9-1 at that point, to be honest with you, and then you go 9-3 on the year. Like, that's a solid year for Jed Fish in year three. They're very similar where they also cannot blow the game that they shouldn't blow, because Washington's done that, and they flirted with it a bunch. The Maryland game last year, Rutgers, I want to say, at home. Like, they've had some uncomfortable games against teams that should not be in games against them.
The Apple Cup's on Sunday. It's separate. It's not lost in the wash of everything on Saturday.
Yeah, it's a standalone game, 1 o'clock on NBC.
Because I think there's a lot of curiosity. Okay, is DeMond Williams, are they all on the same page, or is he just back there trying to pad his stats?
Yeah. Big year for USC, man. I'm tired of them kicking the can down the road. Like, at some point, we got to hold this guy accountable. You're in year five. You can't go 9-3 in year five. You got some bigger issues down there. It all begins for USC tomorrow against San Jose State. Let's start the third hour of the radio program. We're halfway down with a week zero primer outside of USC playing. What do you need to know about the upcoming weekend? We'll get to the dirty poll. It's a little bit different today. We'll explain that and give you the team coming up. Also, will this stat still matter in Oregon doing something for the first time in program history? It's a loaded third hour of the radio program, and it's starting next on 105.1 FM The Fam.